Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Good day, Colorado, and thank you for joining us for the May 28th reading of The Environment, a collection of articles from the Magazine of the Sierra Club, Nature Conservancy Magazine, and Mother Earth News. My name is John. Today we plan to share the following articles from the Magazine of the Sierra Club. The original spirit of Memorial Day is under threat. And we'll also plan to share a fun article from Mother Earth News, Beaver Control. Why do beavers build dams? Any remaining time we'll fill in with articles from Nature Conservancy or any of the other publications. So back to our first article for today. From the Magazine of the Sierra Club, the original spirit of Memorial Day is under threat. This is what's at stake as the Trump administration tries to erase the histories of service members. This was written by Lornette Vestal. It opens up with a picture of a cannon, over the shoulder of a cannon, looking down on a valley with a river that runs through it, a quasi-military area, cloudy skies, lots and lots of green, and it's captioned, "A Confederate Cannon at Lookout Mountain Battlefield in Tennessee." Story continues, "Like many black American families, my family's story begins in the South, where a system of racial oppression enslaved black Americans for generations. However, during the Great Migration, my great-grandparents moved to Chicago. It wasn't until I got stationed in San Diego, California, as a young Navy sailor in the early 2000s, that I saw my first Confederate flag. It threw me off because California is one of the bluest states, yet homes and businesses proudly flew the rebel flag in small towns, suburbs, and the back country. What does this have to do with Memorial Day? Like the Civil War, Confederate sympathizers have tried to erase and rewrite the original spirit of the holiday since its inception. That so many rebel flags fly in a Union state is directly tied to the events that followed the creation of Memorial Day. The first time folks gathered for Memorial Day was in Charleston, South Carolina, on May 1, 1865. A group of freed slaves and white missionaries organized to honor the Union soldiers buried in unmarked graves at a former planter's racetrack. Unfortunately, some historians, scholars, and even leaders have forgotten, ignored, or tried to erase history. This erasure includes attacking diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts and programs within governmental agencies, nonprofit organizations, and the private sector. In March, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered pages from the Pentagon's website honoring a Black Medal of Honor recipient and a unit comprised of Japanese American service members to be deleted. Following a backlash, the Pentagon claimed it was a mistake and uploaded the pages back to its website. The U.S. Army and Navy came under fire in February 2025 when they removed pages from the military branch's websites honoring women veterans at the behest of Secretary Hegseth. After public outrage, they reinstated those web pages too. This type of erasure is a direct policy of the Trump administration. Here's what the Military Times reported after some of the pages were removed. On the eve of Black History Month, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth declared Identity Month's dead at the Defense Department, and what the Department of Defense components and military departments will not use official resources to include man hours to host celebrations or events related to Cultural Awareness Months, including National African American Black History Month, Women's History Month, and Pride Month. Here another picture is inserted, three men standing up on top of a rocky peak, a river in the background, some green valleys, and pretty cloudy skies. The picture is captioned, "From left, hiking at Lookout Mountain Battlefield in Tennessee, Sherman Neal II, the deputy director of the Sierra Club Military Outdoors Program and a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, Lornette Vestal, the senior campaign representative, Sierra Club's Military Outdoors, and a naval veteran, and Chris Pape, a Tennessee chapter volunteer and Army veteran." Story continues, "The campaign to remove people from history is not new. It started during Reconstruction after the Civil War. In the Jim Crow era, organizers like the Daughters of the Confederacy fought and advocated for whitewashing the violent acts committed by the Confederacy as a direct rebuke to the newly formed freedoms granted to black people. The first wave of Confederate monuments arose between 1890 and 1900, well after the Confederacy lost the war, to remind freed black people of their second-class citizen status. The second wave of Confederate monuments and flags were built during the Civil Rights era from 1954 to 1965. These monuments popped up primarily in the South, but can also be seen nationwide. The resurgence of the Confederacy was not in remembrance of our collective Civil War. Instead, it was intended to keep white supremacy alive. Various elected state legislatures and advocacy groups placed many of these Confederate monuments on public lands across the United States. Places like Stone Mountain Park in Georgia and many of our national parks have Confederate monuments in them. The Stone Mountain Action Coalition, an advocacy group in Georgia, once highlighted how state actors lionized the Confederacy in public places. The Georgia legislature established the Stone Mountain Park and legally required it to serve as a Confederate memorial in defiance of the Supreme Court's Brown v. Board of Education decision ending school segregation, the group writes on its website. The park is legally required to sell Confederate memorabilia in their gift shop. Walmart, Amazon, and eBay have banned the sale of such items. There's a difference between understanding history and glorifying it. Stone Mountain Park is a state park that's privately operated and celebrates the Confederacy, the same Confederacy that declared war on the United States to maintain the enslavement of black bodies. No Civil War battle took place at this site. Rather, this is a form of rewriting history so that these leaders appear noble and dignified when their actions proved otherwise. In his second term, President Trump and his administration are championing the renaming of public lands after Confederate generals and soldiers and calling to mandate to maintain Confederate monuments across the country. Trump administration funding cuts and attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion threaten to erase the history of the Buffalo Soldiers in Houston. Following Trump's March 2025 executive orders, Arlington National Cemetery is scrubbing its website for any mention of DEI. The removal of materials highlighting the achievements of black, Latino, and female-identified veterans has prompted concern from a noted Civil War historian and educator, Kevin M. Levin. The Trump administration's attack on DEI also resulted in the erasure of indigenous war heroes, from Ira Hayes to Lori Pistua. The act of removing and erasing the achievements of black, brown, queer, and female-identified veterans is a dishonor to all who served. That includes the formerly enslaved black Americans and the white missionaries who helped to establish Memorial Day. Their stories, their sacrifices, erased and forgotten, leaving a bitter taste of injustice. Service members have come from every background and culture across eras, from the Revolutionary War to the War on Terror, when I was a 17-year-old swearing into the armed forces. Like every service member before and after me, I took an oath that I would support and defend the Constitution. We took an oath to protect our country, not a particular president, political party, or faction that warred with the nation to maintain a system of slavery and oppression. The history of the Confederacy has a place in museums and war memorials celebrating its defeat. Instead of celebrating the Confederacy, our government and political leaders should uplift the commitment to protecting and honoring all citizens, no matter their race, creed, gender, sexuality, or ability. Having spent the last decade traveling and working across the Deep South, I've appreciated its distinct character. Georgia includes Atlanta, an economic powerhouse and source of Southern pride. Meanwhile, states like Texas and Florida are some of the fastest growing in the nation. The love for this region is understandable, given its natural beauty, culinary delights, vibrant music scene, and diverse cultures stretching from the swamps of southern Arkansas to the mountains of Virginia. However, the reverence for the Confederacy is unconscionable. Acknowledging this history is crucial. I believe my fellow Southerners would concur that our public spaces should not become monuments to the Confederacy. The Confederacy belongs to the past, a past that the original Memorial Day should have firmly laid to rest. And a note on the author, Lornette Vestal was born and raised in Chicago, served in the United States Navy, and has traveled the world. He once defended himself in court and won the case. Lornette now lives in Atlanta with his wife and two vicious beasts named Mare and Stella. He serves as the Sierra Club's Military Outdoors Senior Campaign Representative. And in respect to continuing education, why do beavers build dams? Learn why beavers build dams and how to outsmart them using water control structures. Written by Doug Thalacker. As one might expect, the article opens with a picture of a beaver mounted upon a dam in a calm pond. And the article begins, "Beavers have been integrated into our lives for centuries. Sayings such as, busy as a beaver, eager beaver, and leave it to beaver," okay, I might be stretching that here, all come from the apparent industriousness of beavers. The Greek word castor, which means one who excels, is probably the root for the beaver's genus, castor. The provinces of Saskatchewan and Alberta use the beaver in their official seals. Oregon is the beaver state. Beaver lore abounds in Native American cultures. Even Aesop had a story about how a beaver saved itself, although the story is not for gentle ears. The beaver has played many roles on the North American continent. Its meat, fur, and castoreum were used by Native Americans for thousands of years before the beaver became one of the principal financial sources that funded the exploration and colonization of the continent by Europeans. Today, after near extinction by the fur trade, American beavers have made a dramatic comeback. They have repopulated much of their historic range to the point now, in many places, the beaver population has become a pest with a propensity for shoeing trees, building dams in unwanted places, and digging into man-made ponds. Beaver history. Castor canadensis is a rodent. It is a member of a larger order that includes gophers, kangaroo rats, and pocket mice, and is the second largest in body size behind capybaras. Fossil evidence indicates that modern wild beavers evolved from the family Castoridae starting about 24 million years ago during the Miocene epoch. Some members of this family reached 6.5 feet in length and 220 pounds in weight. Even at the end of the Pliocene, 11,000 years ago, there were bear-sized beavers in Canada. As our modern beaver evolved into the bark-eating animal of today, it also reduced in size. Beavers of today have body length of roughly 40 inches, plus a tail in the range of 15 inches. Adults weigh about 30 to 65 pounds. Here's a small picture of a beaver at night. Beaver looks shiny, silver, and it's dark all around it. It's captioned, "Overnight, beavers diligently worked to repair damage to their dams." Article continues, "The beaver is superbly adapted to its watery lifestyle. Beavers have evolved streamlined bodies, webbed feet for swimming, they do not swim with their tails, and muscular bodies for pulling heavy loads. The beaver's iron-embedded, ever-growing teeth and the skull that supports those teeth are designed for one thing, gnawing wood. Beavers feed on many types of plants, but their extra-long gut is designed to extract nutrition from the cambium of wooden plants. They even have the habit of eating their own feces as a method of extracting the maximum amount of nutrients from their lignin-laden diet. The coat of a beaver has 75,000 to 150,000 hairs per square inch. That's more hair in the area of a postage stamp than humans have on their entire head. This dense fur keeps beavers warm, protects them from predators, and helps them float. Daily grooming using a modified toenail on their hind feet spreads oil collected from a gland under their tails to make their fur water repellent. The coat of oil also traps a layer of air next to the skin that helps insulate the body, such as a neoprene wetsuit does for divers. The beaver has adaptations to its throat and a second set of fur-lined lips that keep water from entering its lungs so it can carry limbs underwater. These are only a few of the many ways beavers have evolved into the ecosystem engineers that changed the face of North America. It is, of course, the beaver's ability to cut and use trees for the building of dams and lodges that has so intrigued humans. Birds can build elaborate nests, prairie dogs can tunnel into acres of prairie, termites can build huge mounds, but none of these animals change the basic structure of their environment. Like humans, beavers can alter the ecology of an area. Beavers can change dry land into wetlands and open water. Their beaver ponds and channel digging can divert the direction of streams. Their ponds capture and retain sediments and act as a nutrient and carbon storage traps. Their constant need to gnaw on saplings and trees can turn a dense forest into an open forest, which in turn impacts the plants and animals living there. European beaver exploitation. It was principally its fur that made the beaver such an economic driving force in the European colonization of North America. In the mid-1800s, beaver felt hats were the height of fashion. Basically, the underfur was put through a series of processes to produce felt. The felt could then be shaped into hats and other clothing. Castoreum, an oily fluid from the beaver's castor glands, was used in perfume, food flavoring, think artificial vanilla, and medicine. Generations of beavers were harvested during this time, altering the population of beavers and the natural landscapes they managed. The Hudson's Bay Company, which still exists today in the guise of several different retail stores, was incorporated in 1670 to control, politically and economically, the trade of beaver pelts. 1670. This driving force literally changed the face of North America culturally, politically, and ecologically. Why do beavers build dams? Although beavers can be beneficial, they can also become, at best, a pest, and at worst, a danger, and can cause tens of thousands of dollars worth of damages when they do their thing in unwanted places. Their dam building on free-flowing streams and at culverts and bridges can cause water to overflow and undermine roads and bridge abutments. Dams can alter water pathways significantly. The resulting beaver ponds, which, while beneficial to many types of wildlife, are destructive to other types, flooding dry habitat, woodlands, and farmland. The impacts of beaver dams on agriculture and infrastructure can be severe in certain areas. My beavers seem to have an appetite for hundreds of saplings that have grown from the thousands of seedlings I laboriously planted 10 years ago. High-value trees, in both economic and environmental terms, such as oak, tamarack, and maple, must taste much better than low-value prickly ash and invasive buckthorn and honeysuckle. So while I appreciate and value the benefits of beaver dams, such as increased freshwater habitats and impacts on ecosystem biodiversity, I often wish they would take their industriousness somewhere else. In the late 1950s, my uncle built a dike across a spring-fed marsh that was once used to harvest marsh hay. Some modifications over the years have produced a nice 6-acre pond that is used by ducks, geese, mink, muskrats, and now beavers. The beaver activity in this pond has increased recently, leading to both ecological benefits and infrastructure concerns. The normal course through the year was that the pond would rise in spring with the snowmelt and rains. Water would run out of the culvert for a couple months until the water table dropped and many springs dried up for the rest of the year. The water level of the pond would fall below the culvert, and whatever inflow from springs that came into the pond was taken care of by evaporation and seepage through the dike. Over the past 5 or 6 years, however, the water table has remained high. High enough that my well has become artisanal and the springs flow all year. This means water flows out the culvert all year. This is not an issue in and of itself, but when you add beavers to the mix, some dire problems arise. Dam building is instinctual in beavers. They build dams to create open water. They need water at least 3 feet deep or more to keep the entrances to their lodges submerged. Water depth is a critical part of beaver habitat requirements, especially during winter. The question is, how do they know where to build their dams? The answer appears to be by the sound of flowing water, and not just any flowing water. They don't try to dam a fast-flowing river, but they will try to dam a low-gradient, small flow, such as that through a culvert. Beaver damming is guided by auditory cues that signal potential for creating an ideal habitat. The typical beaver lodge starts as a pile of sticks with an underwater entrance. Beavers enlarge the lodge by adding sticks, mud, and plant debris to the outside and chewing away the inside. A bank lodge is started as an underwater entrance that comes out onto the surface of land. The beavers add sticks and mud plant cement on top of the hole. As the hole is widened, they add more sticks and mud, and the process continues, leaving a relatively flat roof. Again, and in and of itself, this might not be a problem. My dike that contains the water is mostly sand. When I dismantled the roof of the bank lodge, I found a hole about 4 feet deep and 6 feet in diameter. It was more than a third of the way into the dike. My options were ignoring it and letting nature take its course, trapping or destruction and subterfuge. Letting nature run its course was not a viable option. On my pond, there's an 18-inch outflow culvert, which is enough to handle any outflow. The outflow culvert on my pond was plugged by beavers. Before the damming, the water was 4 feet deep right in front of the culvert. After the beavers dammed up the outlet, the water level raised by at least 18 inches. I knew that without daily removal, it would probably overflow the dike. If I let the beavers continue to dig their lodge into the dike, there would eventually be a blowout somewhere along the dike, and the pond would drain. The beavers, being who they are, would probably quickly plug the breach, but this boom and bust cycle would not be conducive to the health of all the other creatures that use the pond. This is because patterns in beaver ponds often lead to rapid changes in water level, which can stress local flora and fauna. I've tried trapping in the past, having trapped as a teen, but it's a time and labor-intensive operation. Traps have to be checked daily, and the pelt has to be processed or it will go to waste. Removing beavers is like putting up a vacancy sign. New beavers will come and fill the empty niche. Beaver interaction with the environment is resilient. When one group leaves, another often moves in to maintain beaver activity in a promising area. Destruction and subterfuge was the course I chose. I figured if the triggers for occupancy, food and shelter, were taken away, maybe the beavers would leave. Taking food away was not realistic, as I wanted the saplings to grow into trees. I used some plastic snow fencing to protect some of the young trees, but there are a lot of trees. Destruction of the lodge proved effective at getting the beavers out of the pond. There were 3 bank lodges being constructed. I removed the roof and collapsed the entrance to each lodge. The following evening, the beavers tried to repair the roof. The hole was more than 3.5 feet deep and 5 feet across. By the third day, they gave up and left for parts unknown. Their need for a suitable habitat with deep water, cover, and accessible food made my location less viable once I disrupted those conditions. If this was all I had done, the beavers would have just kept coming back and digging more lodges and continually plugging the culvert, so I launched the subterfuge step. It had 2 parts, stopping the beavers from plugging the culvert and removing the sound of flowing water while still letting the water flow. I'll call it a caster con, as Beaver Deceiver is already taken. To achieve this, I started by building a barrier around the culvert that will let water flow but cannot be plugged by the beavers. This disruption to their usual audio engineering cues limits further damming and helps stabilize the stream bed and water level. This may be enough in some situations, but it does not completely remove the sound of flowing water, so the beavers will keep trying to plug the leak. So my next step was to eliminate the sound by inserting a pipe into the culvert with the inlet resting on the bottom of the pond. Because the inlet is on the bottom, there is no sound to attract the beaver. With the water level kept lower, the entrance to the lodges is too shallow for the beavers to feel secure, and eventually they'll give up and leave. Or at least, that's the idea. If a beaver is making a new pond by building a dam that's causing problems, this same effect can be achieved by burying a drain pipe in a beaver dam. After checking with your game warden, tear out part of the dam, lay down a drainage pipe, and when the beavers repair the dam, the sound will disappear, but the water can still flow out. This technique is especially useful in headwater streams, where dams on fish migration routes could cause barriers to movement for certain fish species. While fish migration can sometimes be impeded by poorly placed dams and streams, careful control of water levels and installation of bypasses can minimize the ecological impact. In the broader ecosystem, the role of beavers in maintaining freshwater habitats cannot be overstated. Their beaver ponds provide a refuge for aquatic plants, stabilize plant roots during dry periods, and enhance carbon storage within sediment. By meeting their habitat requirements, beavers support impacts on ecosystem biodiversity through a dynamic network of beaver interaction with land, water, and other species. That does conclude the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us for the May 28th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.